It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How can loneliness be our teacher? What makes solitude a positive force? Longtime journalist and author Terry Laxton Brooks spent years of soul searching on these questions and posing them to the medical community on how to cope. Be part of this with your questions. What feelings surface for you as you confront loneliness? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Terry Laxton Brooks is a native of Reedsburg. New book is called On Loneliness, How to Feel Less Alone in an Isolating World. Terry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's take the temperature first on loneliness. You say it happens when we feel close to someone and then pull away. Is loneliness a good or bad force?
That's a very good question to start with. It can be either or it can be both. I have found that the most important thing is for everyone to understand that loneliness is transitory. So it's different from clinical depression, for example. It will come and go. And some believe it is a universal human condition. We're all born lonely. You know, we come out of the womb crying and spend the rest of our lives getting over it, I guess. But there are basically five kinds of loneliness, which I learned from one of the people I interviewed for this book. One is interpersonal, when you miss someone you love. And that could be because they've moved away or unfortunately have passed away. Or you have moved. The second is social, when you're excluded from a group, whether it's in school or among your family. The third is cultural, when you feel cut off from a tradition, from the familiar values and your familiar values and roots. And the fourth is cosmic, when you feel like the universe is pointless. It's absurd, and there's no God or spiritual connection. And this is really the loneliness of the existentialist, where you just feel that you are not in sync with a positive experience of being in the world. And the last is psychological, when you just feel alienated from yourself. You're out of touch with your true nature. You're not being yourself. And there's subtle but important differences, because there are different ways in which you can, as soon as when you recognize the type of loneliness you have, it gives you the opportunity to figure out how to, quote unquote, fix it, or whether it needs fixing at all.
It seems like there's nuance to those five kinds, but there is only one word, which is, seems like such an umbrella word, loneliness.
That's another really good point. It is an umbrella word, and I compare it to the word love. There's so many iterations of the word love, before the word love, and it can be romantic love, it can be platonic love. It can be love the outdoors. It can be a thousand different things. It can be parental love. Yet we only have one word for it.
We are exploring loneliness. I'm going to just reintroduce you here for just a moment, Terry, as we explore loneliness with journalist and author Terry Laxton Brooks. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I want to circle now over to your childhood experiences, because, you know, you have those roots in rural Wisconsin, in Reedsburg. How was growing up in Reedsburg isolating for you as a child?
It was the kind of loneliness where I knew that I didn't fit in, and I didn't know why. And I didn't at that time have a sense of any sense at familiarity with loneliness per se. I just, from the beginning, felt like the stork dropped me in the wrong place and in the wrong family. How can one explain this? I don't know. There are many, many, you know, hundreds and thousands of people who feel this way. We don't always know why. In my case, I had a grew up in a very difficult family. There were a lot of psychological issues within the family, and I decided very early on to protect a space inside myself to get through the early years, and as soon as I could, to escape in order to find out who I really was, to try to find out where I belonged.
I thought it was poignant, that memory you share about this hide and seek with your brother who fell through the bay window when you jumped out to scare him, and that emotion of loneliness that you felt after that accident. What happened there?
Yeah, that was pretty devastating. So we were playing hide and seek. I was about, I guess, 8, and I have 4 brothers, and we're all 2 years apart. They're each two years apart, younger than me. So I was playing hide and seek in the living room with my brother, who was 4 at the time. And I hid in a closet, and he was sitting on the edge of a couch, that and the back of the couch faced the window, the window that overlooked the porch. I leapt out from the closet and said boo or whatever. He fell backwards through the window and landed on the front porch, and I thought I had killed him. So I ran out there. My mother was home. She ran out, and she hailed a car and took him to the hospital. He was fine. But that's a very dramatic, you know, incident of already feeling different in the family and needing to find ways to survive. And then thinking that I harmed my beloved brother, you are completely alone and lonely in that moment.
You examine how some parents, some caregivers are emotionally distant from their children. Some are overprotective. Some parenting styles can be a reflection of how those parents were treated by their parents. It gets passed along. How can parents help children prepare for handling loneliness that they will encounter, or being alone in life?
Yes, that's in one of the introduction to one of the chapters. It's chapter 2 in my book. It's a chapter on childhood. I have a little quote. It's from a quote from a poet that says, where the mother says to her child, I wish you, oh, hold on, I need to, well, I don't have it handy, but I wish you a light, I wish you in your life that you have pain so that you know how to handle it. And it's very unusual, you know, for a mother to wish her child pain. Mm. Here, I would that life would should hurt you, and you be unafraid of pain. It's very hard. I'm a mother, and we do everything we can to protect our children. But as you mentioned, we learn from our parents, and it's very hard to unlearn, to learn how to be a parent, to unlearn bad parenting, because you don't, as a child, really know it's bad until it's too late. And to love a child unconditionally and not spread to them the errors and the pain, you know, that's left over from having bad parenting is a gift. If you can get through that kind of loneliness has followed me my whole life. And I think if you feel a severe loneliness in childhood, I don't think you ever really get over it. And you can certainly learn to recognize it, analyze it, but it's pain. So, you know, it's not something that you can say, oh, now I know what it is, so I can fix it. And I spent many years looking for ways to fix it. And frankly, writing this book and allowing myself to go through the full gamut and emotion of loneliness is what finally brought me through. But it's a lot of hard work when you do this. And it took me a few years of therapy to really be free.
Terry Lexton Brooks, author of On Loneliness, you can join in with your questions about loneliness. Share your experiences, your observations, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine a personal journey through loneliness and what feelings of isolation have caused in you. Our nation's top doctor describes a loneliness epidemic out there. Join in with your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Terry Lexton Brooks's new book is called On Loneliness. Terry, you were 35 when you felt you had actually broke free from your parents emotionally, and you call that step the most difficult of your life. Why is the process of separation difficult and really important?
I can speak in my case specifically. I really had no sense of a differentiation between myself and my mother. I had no idea, and I was not encouraged to sort of explore myself in different ways. I was very much under the umbrella or the shadow, I should say, of a mother who obviously through no fault of her own also had bad parenting. And she sort of spread that to her children. And so as a result, in my case, I didn't have an example of good mothering when I became a mother. And I was a working mother. And then soon, pretty early in my son's youth, I also became a single mother. Hmm. So when you are in, talk about feeling lonely and adrift and alone, when you, there's so much angst going on with you and you can't figure out what it is. There's a lot of pressure on you to provide for your child. And yet at the same time, you can't be with your child as much as you would like because in my case, I was also working. All of these things lead to a situation where I'm sure my son and I haven't talked about it, but I'm sure that he has been impacted by all of this. And the way I learned to be a better mother was because I had two sets of neighbors who I was friends with the mother, and they each had three or four children, and they were model mothers in my mind. They were always home. They were loving. They were non-critical of their children. They were supportive of what their children wanted to do and gave them opportunities. And they were relaxed about it. They were easy about it. And so I, along with taking my son, spent a lot of time in their home just with the kids playing together, the parents being there, particularly the father figures who were strong father figures. And that was really helpful for me. And I think for my child to be put ourselves in situations of a loving family.
What about space for partners? I mean, you say in the best relationship, partners give each other time and space to be alone. How does a couple strengthen their connection by spending time apart?
Another really good question. You know, sometimes the loneliness comes because we're never alone. And that is a very isolating feeling. especially if you're never alone in a family situation. So it's a little tricky. It can be difficult to say, I love you, but I need more time to myself. I feel, not smothered isn't the right word, but I just feel like I need more space. I need more time. And then for the book, I interviewed a doctor who said that he always traveled alone. Although he had a family, he said they understood when he went abroad or just traveled alone. He said, I always had an opportunity to gather myself back together without responsibilities, to really focus on who I am, how I feel about myself. It might be how I can be a better, more loving person. But he always felt, he didn't feel lonely. He felt alone in a very positive way. And so there is a difference between being alone and being lonely. And you can be, just feel overwhelmed by too muchness of a, you know, in a family. I come from a very large family and they're here in Wisconsin, and they handle that very well. I think they do really well at having a lot of togetherness among them, but also, you know, they plan things in small groups or just husband and wife or whatever.
I wonder if you see Wisconsin in a different way than you did when you were growing up here.
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. Yes, because now I'm free from under the, you know, regime of being a child and trying to survive and knowing that the only way I could really survive is to get out of town. And the only way I could do that was to go to the university. So I did apply and was accepted at UW. And I knew once I got there, I would be fine because there were so many unknowns. I could sort of find myself there without being under the thumb of anyone.
Talking with Terry Lexton Brooks about the book On Loneliness, and you can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. You bring up talking with a doctor about loneliness, and I found it interesting that you encountered a stigma about loneliness as you worked on the book and sought to talk with people in the medical community about loneliness, where there is a lot of research and, you know, academic research. Why do you think that stigma exists?
Well, yes. I mean, for there to be a national discussion on loneliness is new. You know, I wrote this book a while ago. Loneliness was not on anybody's radar screen. So when I was doing my initial interviews for this book, it was like talking about your bowel movements, you know? I mean, it was just something you don't admit, because to be alone is to be stigmatized in some way. If you're living alone or you prefer to do things alone or, and to admit to loneliness was simply not done. And so the first doctor I interviewed, I asked him, I said, do you ever feel lonely? And he said, yes. And I said, how do you handle it? He said, I pour a glass of wine, I get a book, and I drink and read until I fall asleep. And that was about it, you know. So he was not really apparently able to get a handle on his loneliness, at least at the time I spoke with him.
I wonder, has loneliness changed a lot in a couple generations since your first book, Bittersweet, on loneliness?
Yes, I'd just like to mention just two quick statistics, because they call loneliness now as an epidemic. And there were two very interesting studies that were released right before COVID. The studies had been done in the 2 or 3 years prior to COVID and were released literally a month or two before or into COVID. The first study was done at the Harvard Graduate School of Education.
And Terry, I just want to pause right there on those studies and just reintroduce you for just a moment. The new book on loneliness, call in with questions about loneliness, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Loneliness manifests in many stages of life, can be a source of growth. Longtime journalist and author Terry Laxton Brooks details her personal journey and discoveries in her new book called On Loneliness. Call in with your thoughts and questions about isolation, what it feels like to you. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Terry, let's dig into the research. The health company Cigna Group says 61% of American adults were considered lonely in 2019 before the pandemic. And then 3 years later, that percentage remains about the same. And you bring up the Harvard study that says more than one in three Americans struggle with loneliness. Does this type of research surprise you?
Oh, it surprised me very much when I started it, because I assumed that most people who feel lonely are elderly people. Mm-hmm. And none of these surveys, the two surveys I use because I feel they're the most legitimate in terms of their data, the surveys were very different from one another, but they had pretty much identical results that show that actually the biggest cohort of people suffering from loneliness are young adults under the age of 25 and below, which surprised me also. So when they looked deeper into why young people feel so lonely, both studies also correlated or found that those who reported feeling the loneliest were also the heaviest users of social media. And that surprised me, because you sort of hear about that you should stay off social media, and yet social media can be a way to connect. But clearly from this data, that's a problematic assumption. The need is to get away from social media and to get in front of real people, to get into situations or groups where you can engage and enact in a meaningful way. And that's not the case generally in social media.
I think this is a moment to bring up friendships and the role of friendships in connection to loneliness. I mean, you used words like possessive, more realistic, more flexible. Mm. Why are friendships so essential?
Oh, yes. So friendships give you an opportunity to meet and develop bonds with people who obviously share some of your common values, but maybe not, and certainly differ in ways. They have different insecurities. They have different preferences. And can teach you and expose you to the sort of brains and dreams of people who you understand, who in a way are like you because you're friends, but in another way have that difference. And so as in a friendship, you always recognize there's a little chasm there. You know, it's easier to come and go. You may not talk to your friend for a month, or you may, because of various reasons, but the minute you get back on the phone or the minute you see them again, it's like it was just a few days ago. Hmm. And that has a lot to do with a lack of expectations.
How do you view friends who choose to live alone and who are thinking, you know what, I appreciate my solitude, I appreciate my space, I'm not lonely, but I live alone.
I have a friend exactly like that. And she has lived alone for 30 years, at least. And she is a solitary person. She's very comfortable living alone. She interacts with me and some other friends by email primarily. She's really, really bright, and she's a wonderful writer. So she engages with, I won't name the newspaper, but one of the newspaper, and a big newspaper editors, by sending in editorials on her thinking that are very well reasoned. She has a very active life of the mind and really doesn't have, doesn't feel, she's just alone. She's not lonely. And she's, to me, the purest, you know, person I know who's who can live like that and be perfectly comfortable. And when she wants, she'll go out in the world. She lives in New York. She'll go out in the world and, you know, just walk the busy streets or go to a concert or something that she really wants to do. But she doesn't need to do it with anyone to have it feel shared. She can share it within herself and feel whole.
Talking about loneliness with journalist and author Terry Laxton Brooks, you can join in with your questions, your experiences at 800-642-1234. Terry, let's turn to acceptance, like your friend. When you accepted your loneliness and stopped struggling against it, stopped fighting it, you had found that the loneliness seemed to disappear. What strategies, mm-hmm. What strategies helped you along that trajectory?
Yeah. If I had the perfect recipe, wow, I'd love to tell you. So it was strange. Now, there's a difference between prolonged chronological loneliness, which is the dangerous kind, where it can affect your heart, it can make you more vulnerable to dementia, and all of these things. There's this transient loneliness, which is not so dangerous, but important that you try to figure it out. And it's often depression and loneliness are often intertwined together. So, but they're different. So you sort of have to figure out which combination or which you feel. It just, you know, when I was writing my book on loneliness, I was never lonely. And when the book was done, by that time I had gone through, as I mentioned, therapy, but also a lot of different, you know, yoga and
meditation,
transcendental meditation, mm-hmm. and things like that. Something lifted, and I suddenly felt freed without knowing exactly what it was, except I had worked my way through it.
I'm curious about the transcendental meditation in particular. What impact did that have on you?
Well, I didn't really believe in meditation at the time. And, but it was, I liked it because, at that time there was a very well-known Indian guru called Swami Satchidananda who had come to the United States, and I went to one of his talks, and he was such a funny person. I mean, he had such a great sense of intrinsic humor about himself and life, and he was so relaxed, and it was pleasant going to hear him. So I thought I would go up to a retreat and try it, you know, for a few days, and try just meditating in silence. It was a silent retreat. I went up there. I tried the retreat. I hated it. I hated that I couldn't talk to anybody.
Barely eating.
Not even during eating. Just, very light meals. It was in a former nunnery, and I'm an ex-Catholic, so that was stressful for me. It brought up a lot of stuff. But when I left that retreat, I at the very, on the very last day, I felt like I felt, I'm so glad I did this. I feel different. I feel less constrained. Something's changed in me. And when the book was done, also, well, I'll stay with the transcendental meditation. I went back and to transcendental meditation and just did it in a room in my neighborhood where people gathered for this kind of meditation. And what happened was, I was meditating or just doing the chant that you are assigned and that sort of thing silently. And I forgot to turn my phone off. My phone rang and my heart just went up, leapt. It was a huge jolt. And I thought, where was I? Where did I come from to come back into the current reality? And then I realized meditation really does do something, brings you, allows you, without any guilt or pain or anything, to dig deeper by simply relaxing.
You mentioned being in a group for meditation. What about meditating on your own in isolation?
Yes, that I think is even more powerful. If you can do that, I meditate on my laptop using a meditation, a person who's on YouTube. Interestingly enough, it's a free meditation. And of course, during COVID, all of us, many people were looking for something like this to help them, whether it was meditation or Al-Anon or, by Zoom, things by Zoom. But
Terry, when should people who feel lonely consider getting help, consider visiting a therapist?
If it becomes chronological, and no matter what you try, you can't get out of it. You feel like, in my case, when I looked at it, I would go outside and look at the sky when I was in my loneliness all those months and years. And the sky would look gray to me, but I knew it was really blue. It was a beautiful blue, but it's like even my vision was affected. So when you have chronological, that was pretty extreme, but when you have chronological, continual feelings of, if you can't tell if it's depression or loneliness, it helps to do a sort of, check of yourself. Why would I feel depressed? 1, 2, 3. Why would I feel lonely? What's changed in my life if I didn't feel lonely before and now I did? Because people don't always recognize loneliness for what it is. It's just a bad feeling without having a name. So, and it can sneak up on you and stay there. So it's really important to consider it as a separate thing to look at, apart from whatever else might be bothering you. And then there's nothing like going to a good, solid, practical therapist, if you can afford one, explaining your loneliness to that person, explaining the situations, and then listening and hearing what they have to, what they say and what they think about it. That then opens up sort of a new way for you to look at your loneliness. But the important thing, if you're in a prolonged loneliness, you do need to get help because it can affect you physically. Mm-hmm.
Longtime journalist Terry Lexton Brooks with us examining her own journey through loneliness, through life. Still time to explore your questions and experiences with loneliness, with isolation, lack of social connection. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine living alone, lack of companionship, how to confront feelings of isolation. Still time to discuss your questions, your feelings about loneliness, 800-642-1234. Journalist Terry Laxton Brooks' new book is called On Loneliness. Terry, you've said how current events lead us to feel powerless, to feel apathetic. How do you suggest people respond to news of other people's loss and pain and destruction?
Well, my immediate thought is to turn it off. And we suffer from an excess of repetition on television news shows, as everybody's probably, I'm sure, has noticed. We hear this horrible, and there are more and more horrible stories, particularly around gun violence, but many other kinds of very destructive forces as well. Stressful stories like the failure of Silicon Bank, that could affect us financially or, you know, in very basic ways for years. So we cannot help but become impacted and depressed. We don't need to know that much news. We don't, you know, a television newscast have commentators on there, they need to fill the time. So they will continue to fill the time with whatever is the latest, usually bad news. And we hear it repeatedly, no matter what news channel we might turn to. So that is really demoralizing. And we may turn off the TV and not think about that so much in that way, but it feels dangerous to me anyway. And I think it's dangerous in general to start to feel like we live in such a dangerous world, such a divisive world, hostile world.
And I just want to pause there on hostile world as I write down that word, because you describe this puppy being hit repeatedly by a stranger in a park, and that you can't do anything about it, or you choose not to confront it. What is that inner numbness or that inaction like, and how does it relate to loneliness?
Yes, that reaction of watching that puppy being beaten was, I was with a friend. My reaction was fear. It was fear. I can't really explain the fear, except it was a need for self-survival. I didn't want to get involved. And my friend ran over to help the puppy, but I stayed apart. And in staying apart, I felt I demeaned myself, like my fear had frozen me. And I was disassociating myself from what was going on around me. And that's what, you know, if you are rampant watchers of news, that is what is happening as this country splits apart. And it becomes harder and harder to have acceptable differences. Everything is like a mini combat. And that moves everybody, or moves me and a lot of other people, from a day-to-day situation of feeling whole, of feeling wholeness, of having that sense of love of life, that appreciation of the small things of life, into a sort of constant also state of alertness. And feeling alone in the world when you see what else is happening in the world, and you see how many people who are trying to cross oceans, you know, to save their lives or their children's lives. And there's nothing you can do. So you become impotent. And in a way, that sort of leads to a strange kind of loneliness, because you can't connect.
And Terry, I want to jump in here. I just want to jump in and go to Diane in Oconomowoc. Diane, what would you like to bring up?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Terry, I certainly enjoy your thoughts. I have lived part of my life in this quote-unquote loneliness and gone to therapists and so forth. And some of the things that have worked for me, or one conclusion I came to, was that my loneliness was caused by living in the past, bringing up guilt or being a victim, thinking I'm a victim, and then just kind of wrapping it up with a big selfish bow. And in search for answers, I worked on a behaviorist model and read this Eckhart Tolle. He's was popular some years ago as a behaviorist, and he talks about that living in the now is so important, and letting go of that and letting go of the past. And so I really like your thoughts on meditation, that he talks about just letting that go, letting all thoughts go, and that maybe euphoric, if lack of a different word, that euphoric feeling you felt during your retreat experience.
Diane, and Diane, short on time here, I hate to cut in, but Terry, I want you to be able to respond about letting go and living in the now.
Mm. Yes, letting go and living in the now is very hard. We all forecast things as we move through the day. You know, what if this bad thing happens? Or what if I forget to do that? Instead of, this may sound strange, but like washing a dish, you know, a simple white porcelain or a white glass dish or whatever, and feeling the warmth of the water over your hands, appreciating the light that shines off the plate. There's so much beauty if we can stay in the moment, but we can't. It's the nature of human nature. So meditation allows that. I think it's the only thing I know of. I'm sure there are other similar things. I do Tai Chi as well. Mm. And that also absorbs your body and your mind. But we're too surrounded by people earning a living by bringing us bad news, by
Terry,
how can I say this? Just being races being isolated from one another,
Terry,
and then all of that.
Thank you for joining us. Appreciate the visit.
Okay, thank you, Kate, for having me on.
Reedsburg native Terry Laxton Brooks, author of On Loneliness. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.